One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Delighted to be joined today by a first-time guest. He is a producer, journalist, and host of the new series Obscurum, Invasion of the Drones. Welcome to the podcast, Stephen, Gabe Lenners. Gabe, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here with you.
If I was a professional, I would have said podcast again and changed that, but people aren't coming here for the professionalism. That's what you're here for, not me. Gabe, we're going to talk about your new series, Obscurum, which is an audio-based show. It's available on multiple platforms. We'll get to all that at the end, how people can listen, but right now they're listening to you here. Before we get into the show, what it's about, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what's brought you here?
Absolutely. So my name is Gabe Lenners. It's great to be with the That UFO Podcast family. You have such a great community here. I am originally from this small town in the middle part of the United States in Nebraska. And I got into broadcasting. I first, believe it or not, used to be a storm spotter. I have this huge passion for weather and looking into the science behind that. And then after that, I did that for a few years and I made my way to Los Angeles. And since then, I've worked as an on-camera host and producer for a lot of different companies like Disney and ABC. But this story, you know, Obscurum Invasion of the Drones is a documentary audio podcast. And this story just came to me, which we'll get into more. But it was a little out of the ordinary for the type of things I usually delve into. But it really kind of encapsulated the people who I know in the world where I grew up, and I had to just get answers into this story.
So you say you're a storm spotter back in the day, and
yeah.
Now I have seen the movie Twister and the new movie Twisters. Are we talking that kind of storm spot? Are you actually chasing the storms or spotting them from a distance?
I have chased storms, like in the movie Twister, though not that intense. I will say that movie, there's a lot of tornadoes. Typically, that many tornadoes don't happen that violently at one time. Definitely played out, but it was a good movie. I enjoyed it and the music. But yeah, I would go out and I studied weather, and I actually went to college to study meteorology. And still in the Los Angeles area, from time to time, I will do weather on TV still as a weather forecaster. So
I can't believe Hollywood would overdo any meteorological phenomenon to make a couple of $100 million for a movie. It's almost like you've ruined a lot of people's dreams there, I think, to the Twister fans listening. But in that time, whether you were spotting storms, chasing storms, or even before then, what was your interest in like the UFO topic?
You know, I've always been interested in, you know, the unknown and unexplained type of stories. I think, you know, one of the most interesting things to me as far as unidentified things in the sky is how people react to the unknown and how they interpret what they're seeing around them. Because, you know, more than ever, when we see a light in the sky, it's so important to ask different questions and figure out what that could possibly be. And it's challenging sometimes. I mean, even in this series, Obscurum, Invasion of the Drones, you know, you have all of these people talking about these drones. But the question is, are they drones or are they possibly something else? And that's one of the main things we delve into in this podcast.
Yeah, and I think that's something we're definitely going to get to very quickly, that word drones being in there, because it's very interchangeable, especially through the first episode into the second episode. a lot of the people you interview, Sarah, Chris in episode one and others, they use the word drone. And very quickly you start to realize, I think, if like myself, you've got that UFO leaning, you know, spin on these things, you could just put the word UFO in. The descriptions of these objects, the behaviors, their feelings when they see them, the out in the rural sticks, you know, middle of nowhere, and these odd lights behaving erratically, you're like, well, these just sound like UFO sightings. But it seems very deliberate that you've gone with drone, and the people involved have gone with drone. Is that something that you were aware of?
Yeah, that's a big thing that I contemplated early on. And I'll just kind of start back at the beginning. But for anyone who hasn't listened to the first episode, so I grew up, like I said, in the middle part of the country. I went home for the holidays and I'm sitting there with my family in 2019. And we get this knock at the door and this police officer. And he says, Gabe, there's all of these flashing lights kind of hovering above the prairie. In middle America. And I wasn't quite sure what to expect when I heard that, but I got in my dad's pickup, drove out there and wanted to see what was happening in the sky. And sure enough, there were these red and white flashing lights. Now, all the people in the area where I grew up started to call these drones. And this is known as the Colorado drone mystery. And this happened in Northeast Colorado, Southwest Nebraska, Northwest Kansas. And that was the go-to name for them. But one of the things that I think that's important to ask, and one of the local sheriffs asked, you know, multiple times in this podcast is, are these drones or are these something else? Because we just have to classify them and be very careful with how we classify them, because they are just flashing lights. So can you say they're UFOs or drones? I would just call them unidentified. But for the sake of the series, everyone called them drones. So that's kind of what we went with in developing and talking about the title of the series.
So was there an opportunity or even a moment where you thought Invasion of the UFOs or something akin to that would have been the title instead?
We were actually just going to go with Obscurum, because Obscurum is Latin for darkness, and that's kind of the overall brand. But I'm sure you saw all the mystery aircraft that started popping up in New Jersey, and drones were on every news channel across the United States, it seemed like. And that was just top of mind. And that's when we decided to kind of go with drones, because I think drone is the new and more casual term for UFO. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think there's been a definite, I don't know if it's hijacking of the language, but it's been easy to replace that word UFO for a lot of folks. And I think it's easier to maybe take in and discuss these things in the mainstream still by saying, it's probably a drone. Now, that doesn't explain a lot of sightings going back before the 80s, obviously. But and that's something I found really interesting. I don't want to jump over too much, but one of your one of the talking heads on the podcast, Bill Bowerly, aviation expert, and he's a former Air Force pilot. He talks about the US military from his experience using drones back in the 80s. Even talks about, I found really interesting, experimenting with, you know, mothership drones and launching smaller drones from bigger aircraft that could be controlled wirelessly, fantastic for war zones and all that kind of stuff. But this podcast isn't about a war zone. You are out in Midwestern in the US, small towns like you're from yourself, those kind of couple of thousand, couple of hundred people. So take us to those kind of locations. What is it like? Is it like I'm kind of imagining in my head? And I suppose I'm going to use Twisters again, for example, which is kind of set a little bit out there in the United States. Is it those kind of small rural communities? Everyone knows each other, but something really strange is happening.
Yeah, you know, that area is very remote. There are small towns. Many of them only have a few thousand people dotted throughout the prairie. And the area is kind of, if you picture grasslands and farmland, there's a lot of cornfields, a lot of wheat fields, a lot of agriculture in the area. It's fairly flat. You have the area of kind of the Colorado Rocky Mountains about 4 to 5 hours to the west. And so you very sharply have the difference between what's known as the Great Plains and then the mountains and stuff. And, you know, with this story specifically, that's the thing, is a lot of these people where this started, I've known my whole life. But as I kind of went out of our little area into other counties and other states, Colorado, Northwest Kansas, Wyoming, many of these people had the same stories. And in this Colorado drone mystery, we're talking about people were seeing drones in such a huge, expansive area. And many times they would describe them, and these are local law enforcement officials, as the size of small cars. They would hover for hours. And you got to think about this too. During that time of year, I mean, it is cold. There's a lot of snow. It's a very cold time of year when a lot of these drones started popping up in late December of 2019 and early 2020. And these AKA drones, or whatever the heck they are, would sit up there for hours. They wouldn't need to be charged. They wouldn't have to go back to a station. They would just kind of hover. And with typical drones, I mean, the batteries die. There's wind shear. Being a meteor or studying weather, there's wind shear in the upper levels of the atmosphere. So they would have to be drained if they're moving around in strong winds. And regardless of the weather, these continued to be there in very large numbers for about a 4-week period from 2019 to 2020.
So take us through some of those initial sightings. And what I'd love to know as well is, you've got this report, you know, Gabe, we've got these flashing lights in the sky. People are reporting these. What are you going into this thinking? Are you thinking UFOs? Are you thinking drones in the sky? We're going back here five or more years now, pre-COVID time. It seems a lifetime ago, I think, given what happened in the intermediate. But late 2019, early 2020, you don't have all the UFO news that perhaps is out now, as much public or mainstream reporting of UFOs. So what was Gabe thinking back then was going on potentially?
You know, as a journalist, I always just like to go where the evidence presents itself. I always have with any story I've covered, whether it's on the red carpet or more of a true crime or mystery type of thing like this. And I didn't really know what to expect. And I kind of kept an open mind. I was concerned with, honestly, at the very beginning, kind of the safety issue, because you have all these things flying around and no one knew what they were. And you don't see tons of stuff, you know, like with the New Jersey sightings, you have multiple major airports going in to the New York City area. When people were seeing these drones, you know, a lot of people were saying drones were planes and vice versa. But in the middle of Nebraska and Colorado, there's just not a lot going on. So obviously, whatever was happening there wasn't typical and wasn't supposed to be there. And I kept an open mind with that. And you touch on the UFO kind of tie-in. But I thought first, has anything like this happened historically in this area before? You know, that was one of the first kind of mindset things I went back to. And sure enough, as I dug into the history of the region, there was a huge UFO sighting that was reported in the 1800s there. Some cowboys were out on the prairie and they saw this ball of light flashing to the earth. And it's been documented in multiple newspapers. And what actually happened there, I'm not sure, because it's over 100 years ago. But then, yeah. I talked to this other guy whose parents had seen weird balls of light in the sky in the general location of where these drones were about 50 years earlier. And then if you get into episode 2, which I'm not sure if you're there yet, but there was another lady who saw one out by her farm many years earlier. And so the bottom line is, like, strange things have happened in that specific area for a long time. And it's hard to conclusively say what, you know, what that is.
So take us through some of the sightings themselves. And for folks, we're recording this about a week before episode 8 drops, which I believe is going to be the final episode of the series. So Gabe, you can give away as much or as little as you want in way of getting folks to actually go and listen to this as well. But, you know, what are some of the incidents that actually happen that, you know, were interesting enough for you to go, there's something here that people need to hear this?
Yeah. So actually there's going to be 9. There's going to be one more episode. We decided. And so, so you just want me to kind of talk about, like, why? Say that one more time.
Go ahead. Pick out a few of the incidents that you've put in there that people are going to hear and why you think that is interesting and not just a light in the sky. And obviously I've heard some of the episodes and could talk to that, but much better coming from you.
Absolutely. One of the most interesting things that I remember early on in this investigation that you'll hear about in the first couple episodes, and hopefully this makes you ask questions about where you live. And if you are living in a remote area, this will definitely hit home. But I interviewed this lady at the very beginning of this drone mystery, and her daughter was driving her car home late one night down a country road back to her farmhouse. She and her husband lived a couple miles away from her parents, and she's on the phone with her mom, and these three drones start hovering above her car. And they're about, as she described, the height of telephone poles. And as she's driving, there starts to be static on the phone with her mom, and, you know, the phone call gets messed up, and eventually a foreign caller ID number pops up on the caller ID. And so it would appear, according to her, that, you know, these aircraft messed with her cell service in a very weird way. So it's kind of like a real life episode of Stranger Things. It's like the real Upside Down. Another thing that you're going to hear in the first few episodes is, which I didn't know I would go here in this story, but one of the farmers who lived in this general area has had very strange things happen for a long period of time, even as it relates to what he described as cattle mutilations on his property. And he looked up into the sky multiple nights, and he believes that there is a correlation, you know, between a UFO, unidentified aircraft or drone, and these mutilations that have happened on his property. And like I said, I mean, I am always in pursuit of the truth as a journalist to get answers and stuff, but I think it's important to ask questions and let, you know, go deep with people who are in the podcast, just to let them kind of share their perspective on what happened. And the bottom line is, as I just said, that there's just a lot of things that are very, very odd that happened during this general time frame at the same time. So that's some of the highlights of the very beginning episodes that I think you're going to really enjoy.
Take us through then some of the actual descriptions of the objects themselves. Now, people are talking about potential, you know, they can see why these aren't aircraft or conventional aircraft. They don't believe they're misidentifying commercial airliners up in the sky. These are much lower down, and they can make out some details as well, can't they?
Okay, let's describe these lights. So the very first night I went out there and looked up into the sky, I saw
one of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Red and white flashing lights. Now, the one large light that I saw was like orb shaped, and it was a white kind of ball of light. And what you would see when you looked at this, you would see these red kind of flashing dots, almost as if they were spidering out from the larger white light. And they would kind of work the sky in conjunction with that light. And this was one of the things that law enforcement also reported to me multiple times in different people who lived there. And many times it appeared that these craft would go above 400 feet and below 400 feet. And typically with drones, you're not supposed to go above 400 feet. And so it was very odd that there was really no, you know, there was really no rhyme or reason that they would move higher or lower. And these were fast too, because I talked to a farmer in the first episode, and just, I mean, picture this, his wife came home one night and saw one of these really close to their home, and he was mad. He didn't know what it was. He described it as a drone. He got in the car and he chased it. And this thing, in his, you know, recounting this to me, was going above 90 miles an hour, and he chased it to the state line of Colorado until he ran out of gas. And so that was just another kind of weird occurrence with these lights. But as I mentioned, you know, briefly before, they would just kind of stay in place, and they would work the sky. And yeah, that's kind of a brief description.
And these are just ordinary folks, aren't they? We're not talking about military installations that are being buzzed. We're not talking about nuclear weapons or secret military testing sites. These are just ordinary folks, ordinary houses, yep.
Ordinary folks, ordinary houses. They've lived there their whole life. A lot of them, you know, they've worked the land. It's a lot of agriculture that goes on there. And yeah, they know if something is happening that's not supposed to be happening. And a lot of people hadn't experienced this before in their life.
What was the impact then on those people? Because I think it's one thing, and we'll get to talk about the kind of more recent sightings in 2024 into 2025, where it's happening in a big way, it's being filmed on social media, you're in major populated areas. This is much more, is it fair to say it's almost a little bit more sinister with the kind of nature, eerie nature of what's going on in that kind of remote location?
I think so. I mean, you can just picture that. You're in the middle of nowhere and you come home and you see lights above your home. I mean, there's no one who lives in some cases for miles away. And if anything would happen, it would take a long time for, you know, someone to get there. And I think that goes back to the question that is just, it's so important to know what's flying above you, because if you are in those areas and these things are coming low, I mean, that was one of the big questions people had and were very, very worried about. And you have to put all the theories on the table. Could it be organized crime? Could it be the government? Could it be something otherworldly? Obviously, all of those things don't make you feel the best anyway, you know? And yeah. So, yeah.
Let's touch on some of those theories then, because those do come up. What are some of those? Should we start with the organized crime? Because I think things like drug trafficking can be mentioned. And I remember a couple of years ago, we had the rubber duck UFO video came out. I don't remember if you saw that at the time.
And I didn't see that. Tell me about that one.
It's a little object shaped sort of like a duck, just because it's on that kind of cold, hot camera, infrared. And it's shooting along, and there were loads of different theories. A lot of folks, it came from the Department of Homeland Security, and a lot of folks were suggesting it was potentially like a drug mule drone, that they use really sophisticated drones that they can travel a lot of distance, because you can have multiple individuals along the way with different receivers and letting these things pass across miles and miles and miles. So while one person can't necessarily control the drone all that distance, you could have Andy at one point, Gabe at another point, you know, X, Y, and the cartels spend loads of money on this, you know, down the line. So obviously drug trafficking is a big business, so you spend a lot of money on some really advanced equipment, but these people don't think they were seeing these types of objects, because I don't think £50 million worth of cocaine was being flown across someone's farmhouse and kept above their house, you know, in Nebraska in the middle of winter, was it?
No, I mean, one of the things that, you know, if we kind of go down that route, that was one of the things that I wanted to try to verify. And in this, obviously, we've talked about, if you see a light in the sky, it's very hard to tell what is actually flying up there outside of the light. So I kind of, at the very beginning of this podcast, thought, let's look at the why. Why could something legitimately be flying in this area? If it is or isn't a UFO, why would something be here in small town America? And, you know, with the crime thing, I can't go into more of that because I don't really, you know as much as you did right there. But that was definitely one of the big worries that people had, was it could be related to some criminal activity. Another thing that I thought and was able to kind of, it was a theory that I was able to really wrap my mind around and knock out and pretty sure that it's not happening, was agriculture. Because in a lot of these areas, you have these spray planes that will fly over and, you know, spray all the crops and stuff with pesticides, and drones have been worked into that a lot. So there are drones that come and fly over crops and spray different things on them. And I thought, well, maybe this is a company that is testing for spraying drones or for spraying crops. And I talked to some experts with that in the time of year, And that was really easy to rule out because of that winter time frame. The theories were a big thing. And that's one of the things we go into in the podcast is just figuring out the why.
And I suppose just to stick with the theories for another moment, if we go down the route of it's not something ET or alien, and we stick with it's a human explanation, even then, it's a very odd situation to have a government drone or a private contractor's drone, and they're out there testing these potentially on the public. Is that something you came across? And I remember at one point, you know, one of the theories that came up in 2024-25 that was dismissed, but, you know, was these things were looking for nuclear missiles or a broken arrow that had gone astray. And that's something that was a theory for this situation as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was a theory that I heard about a few times. And, you know, if you think about that, I'm not an expert in military and if something would be lost on what to do. But the thing is that if you look at the beginning of the progression of these drones, they started, to my investigation, in a small county in northeast Colorado called Phillips County. And as time went out, it expanded out into the east. And so it was almost like these drones were working the sky, pushing east, pushing east, pushing east. And then a lot of the people who I interviewed, you know, they would say, oh, they seem to be flying in a grid. They seem to be doing the same type of thing. And that would allude to what you just said. And in talking with different officials, which I did, I would say that it seemed like there was more just confusion of what was happening. And so you couldn't really hone in on if they were doing that. But according to local eyewitness accounts, they were working the sky and flying in these patterns with the lights I described earlier.
And it's one thing to see these objects, Gabe, in the sky and have it be observational, but were the reports of individuals being injured or hurt or having any kind of form of physical effect from these things?
I don't know how far you've gotten in the podcast, but I'll just go ahead and I'm just going to talk about it. One of the strangest things, not physical in episode 7, I won't spoil it for you, but someone had a very close encounter with one of these and ended up wondering if they did need to seek medical attention. Which I won't spoil it for you, but we do go in that direction. But before we go in that direction early on in the podcast, one of the strangest stories is this guy, he and his wife were at their farmhouse a couple weeks after Christmas, because remember, I kind of started looking into this around New Year's Eve, and they had all this wrapping paper outside of their house. And they'd put it in this barrel, and in the country, you burn your trash. And so he was burning his trash, and the flame was going out. And so he looked out from his farmhouse as this thing is burning and kind of getting down. And he notices one of these craft come and start to hover over the small fire in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's no one around. There's not a town for like 15 miles. And so that was one of the oddest things before you get into episode 7, which I'll let you listen to.
I've listened to most of the podcast and skipped. I've went along some bits and I've been like, okay, and I've got notes. But obviously for the listeners out there who are going to check it out, I don't want to ruin everything for them. Of course, I'm two episodes off of the finale now. But on that then, so do you feel, and do the people you've spoken to believe there's been some kind of cover-up? Because again, we're 4 or 5 years removed from this incident. It didn't carry on. It did begin to stop. It slowed down, didn't it?
It did slow down. And there's a lot of people who believe a lot of things with this. I will say, Andy, that people are still seeing what they're describing as drones out there now. I mean, even since I put out the first few episodes, and I don't know if you've been following what's happening in Wyoming, but people are starting to see a lot of these in Wyoming as well. And I've gotten messages throughout the first few episodes. They never left. They're still here. They're just not in here in large numbers because I look outside and I see them. And it is a, Yeah, I think more than people thinking that there's a cover-up, and I can say this from the beginning, I think there was mass confusion. I think there was confusion on all levels between local officials, federal officials, and the citizens, because in the first few days of everything really going haywire, I was able to talk with people from the FAA. I was able to talk with people from Homeland Security. I was able to talk with local law enforcement and citizens. And while it may seem like, you know, they're not being transparent with everything they knew, and I know that's, you know, been a very big topic in UFO history going back for years, is transparency, that I think people truly didn't understand what was happening with this, because the FAA and Homeland Security, they took out this high-powered aircraft that they used to fight wildfires to try to track these drones. They were flying this thing out and about in Northeast Colorado for days, trying to figure out if they could pick up anything that would allude to what these people were seeing on the ground. And, you know, when that official report came back, there wasn't a lot there. And that's one of the biggest issues, especially in remote areas, that I encountered. If you think about like how someone encounters something. So maybe you have a farmer who sees these drones, and say he reports it to the local sheriff, and say the sheriff like moves it to the state, you know, officials or whoever it is. By the time that all happens, I mean, the thing is gone. It's just a report. How do you really move on those reports in that moment? And the thing that was so different about this is it was happening on such a huge scale at the same time.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
So then this has come around at a good time, because late 2024, we get these sightings actually began in the U.K., initially, above multiple US military installations. Drones are being seen, nothing's happening with them, there's no action being taken. It then begins to crop up on the east coast of the United States, which then becomes this massive news story that actually becomes a big news story as part of the whole presidential race, because the Biden administration are there. They aren't commenting on it. The press team in the White House begin to ask questions. They're kind of being stonewalled. They're getting all kinds of answers. We then have Trump as part of his presidential, you know, campaign saying, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. You know, I'm going to give people the answers. He comes in. People aren't happy with those answers. What's going through your head when you've got this series you're making? You've had this experience in 2019, 2020, and all of a sudden in the news, bang, there's videos, there's footage, there's testimony of these things in the sky again.
Well, you're right. I didn't know what to think, and I haven't really talked about this that much, obviously, but I'm going to talk about it with you because this is That UFO Podcast. But I got on a plane and flew to the Northeast. I flew to New Jersey as those things were starting to pop up all across the East Coast. And so I was like, we need to start interviewing people here on the ground. And so I got there and I went straight down to, and I didn't know what to think when this was happening, but I will say there were strong similarities between some of the things I saw in Colorado and Nebraska and in New Jersey. But I went down with the Ocean County Sheriff's Department, which is on the Jersey Shore, and we put up police drones, and we tried to chase and zoom in on these mysterious drones. And it was very hard to capture any clear footage of them. They seemed to move very quickly, and it was a very odd series of events. And I talked to a lot of witnesses who were down there in both Congress and state senators, and then also people who were experiencing this further inland. But if you look at the history, you were talking about drones. I mean, you've seen drones over the UK, and I want to know, what you think about that. But if you look at kind of the history of what's happened in the United States, you have this 2019-2020 mass drone occurrence. Then you start to have these smaller ones. We've seen drones in Nevada. Then you have Langley Air Force Base in 2023. And those started to pop up, mysterious drones. For about 2 weeks in December, the Pentagon went on the record and talked about those. And then 1 year later, we have a drone incursion, huge scale, the same general time frame. So if you look at the numbers, that's three huge drone incursions from December to basically early January over subsequent years at the same time. Then you have things happening all across the world. So there's a lot of parallels between that end of year time frame from what I've talked to people and interviewed them about.
Yeah, I think it's separating the really interesting incidents reports from what will likely be just your average drone sighting. There's a lot of misidentifications, and I think when normal folks get involved in the UFO topic, if there is some kind of sighting or spate of sightings, like let's talk about the 2024-2025 situation with the drones in the East Coast, loads of folks went outside and started filming things in the sky, and a really quick, you know, peruse through social media, you can see Starlink satellites, space station, stars. People love zooming into stars and then reporting these things as orbs. And actually, it's just an out-of-focus star that your phone has a certain capability to zoom in on it. And it can even look like it's spinning, loads of different weird lights coming off it. But then you do have these reports of, you know, like you mentioned, objects with like 5 and 6 feet wingspans, SUV-sized, car-sized drones, which, whether they're a human drone or not, that's a really interesting object. Why is it over where it's over? Why is it just out there almost brashly in the middle of nowhere or in New Jersey or the East Coast of the United States, whatever it may be? And you start to ask, you know, what is that drone's purpose? What's it doing? And this was like, this became like a mass sighting. And then I wonder, do you believe, or is it a possibility, what happened in 2019-2020 was almost some of these things being trained for a larger exercise that would happen in a far more public setting, more of a public space?
You can't rule anything out. I mean, that is definitely on the table. And I just think it's important to ask questions and try to do the best you can. But I mean, that wouldn't be the wildest theory I've heard, you know? I mean, that makes sense. I think you made a great point too, I wanted to just play on, because when you do have people talking about all of these different sightings and stuff, you do sometimes have, you know, a form of mass hysteria take place, because everyone's out there with their camera and they're filming everything that they see, and you have no clue if it's very hard to differentiate. Is it a plane? Is it a helicopter? Is it a drone? Is it something that has, you know, anomalous or, you know, UAP type of features that, you know, we've heard about and the Navy pilots have captured like that? And I think if you look at the New Jersey sighting there, I mean, just picture that. There was so much going on in the sky at one time. I picture and describe that as a circus in the sky. If there were, in fact, drones that no one knows who they are, our military likely sent up their own drones to study them or something else. There were also people describing orbs. There were also planes from Newark and JFK. There were also helicopters. There were also local news crews with their drones flying stuff. I mean, imagine all of this stuff in the sky at the same time. And then you have all of these people filming everything that they see. So it was kind of ripe for, you know, a mass hysteria type event. However, something very big did happen there, and it was very strange, and no one knows, and the drones were involved. But there were a lot of other factors that contribute to many other sightings at the same time is what I'm hitting at, I think.
Yeah. Why do you think then we got, and this isn't a political question, why do you think we kind of got stonewalled constantly from one administration to the next, that it seemed there's something strange going on here? These weren't FAA approved. They shouldn't have been in the air. These things were flying right above people's homes. The reports that some of these things were brought down and recovered. Yet it just seems to be the public were told there's nothing to see here. Let's move along on multiple occasions. And that's just sort of had to be accepted.
I think that, you know, everyone wants to believe there's a cover up, right? The thing is you're a UFO expert. There's a lot of other people too that are, you know, known as looking into UFOs and stuff. And I think that when it comes to what happened there, I really just think at the early stages, because I experienced it, no one knew what the heck was happening there. And sure, there could be some black ops government group that's running stuff, but like the majority of people, even at the mid-tier levels of government, I don't think that they knew what was going on. And it does appear that they said, oh, there's nothing happening, blah, 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 blah. But I, you know, whether they said that because I'm just not so sure that they said that because they were trying to hide something. I really think maybe they didn't know. And I think with the FAA thing, you warrant a lot of questions, because let's look back at the history of what happened in December of 2024 through January. Okay. We have on December 19th, the FAA issues temporary flight restrictions over 19 areas, I believe, in New Jersey for drones to protect New Jersey's critical infrastructure. Then on the 20th of December, you have temporary flight restrictions that go in place in around 30 areas in New York. And so the FAA is obviously issuing these flight restrictions for drones for special security reasons. But then, as you mentioned, President Trump's press secretary went on the record in early January and said the FAA authorized these flights for research and various other reasons. Why would the FAA be putting temporary flight restrictions in place in such a huge, expansive area and then also just be issuing the drones that they're putting up the temporary flight restrictions against? That's where a lot of the discrepancy lies for me, is that the facts of how it kind of all unfolded don't really align in the best way.
So with the work you have done, Gabe, across this series and then this story breaking in 2024 and carrying on through 2025, and I suppose similarly to what happened in 2019-20, it just sort of slowed down and fell out of the public view. Have you settled on a one particular hypothesis? You think this is what I think happened in those events and what these objects actually were?
I think I'm still trying to, hopefully with this series, get more people to come forward. I don't feel comfortable saying what I think it is quite yet. I've definitely been able to rule some stuff out, as I mentioned, but before I would say that, definitely want to get more information. And that's why I want to keep doing this series, because this series it's great storytelling, but really I'm putting this out there so we can all work together and the people who listen to try to get answers, because there are so many people who are concerned with what's flying above them. And, you know, once I know 100%, if I can ever, I'm going to come to you and tell you first, but I'm honestly not quite sure what's happening. I'm just kind of documenting this strange series and sharing what I learned in hopes that we can get to the truth.
Can you give us a bit of a taste in what's to come in those last two episodes, and then obviously the future for the series of Obscurum in general?
Absolutely. So in the first, or in the last couple episodes, hopefully you've caught up, but we really go towards this kind of local experiences that people have. But in episode 8, things really ramp up. You know, you mentioned the military sites. I'll just kind of tell you what happens at the beginning. I basically take all of that stuff that I've heard related to, like, you know, the military and missile silos, and I go down into a silo that houses a nuclear warhead in the first 5 minutes, and look kind of into that and dive really into that theory with some people. So that's where we get into. And then we kind of lean towards the end into another mysterious kind of set of events that was happening at the same time as these Colorado, Nebraska sightings. So it really ramps up. The best thing to do, though, Andy, is once this is out, is just to binge the whole thing, because I know people have been wanting that. They've been messaging me. So once everything's out, you'll be able to listen to all the episodes together at once.
And for me, what I liked is they're not like an hour-long episodes. These episodes can be like 20 minutes, 25 minutes, half an hour, and you can fly through them really quickly as well, folks. So binging, it's not even going to take you a full day. You can do it in a morning or an afternoon or an evening, or a nice long drive or something like that. I would recommend. That's how I like to find my podcast. But how can people listen to the podcast? What's your preferred methods, Gabe?
The best way you can listen to the podcast, go to Apple, go to Spotify, or you can listen on YouTube, search Obscurum, Invasion of the Drones, and, you know, please follow, please rate, and also leave a review. Those reviews, as Andy knows, they help so much, and it helps us know, like, what theories to look into for future episodes and what you as the listener are most interested in. So, yeah, and then you can check out our website, obscurumseries.com, and all of our social media are linked right on there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gabe, for joining us. You're right with those reviews. They do make a big difference. So while you're leaving Gabe a review, go and do the same for me. That would be much appreciated. And Gabe, when that series is finished, it'd be good to get you back on at some point to catch up on some more drone news. And of course, if you're getting a second season of Obscurum, which I'm sure will happen, that would be also good to talk to you about.
Let's do it. Yeah, if there's anything else that's happening, you know, drone wise there, you have to keep me up to date, because I may have to make a trip over to where you are.
Absolutely. Yeah. You'd be someone, you called me a UFO expert before, and I like to do expert in quotations. There are far better people, more expertise than I have to talk about this subject. And when it comes to drones, you'd be far better placed than me to investigate it. So I'll certainly do that for you. But thank you so much for joining us, Gabe.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org.